Once upon a time, there was a little fairy named Suki, who grew up in the town of Bath in Great Britain. He saw his world change through the impact of Stonewall and the rise of the modern gay rights movement, the AIDS crisis, and the rule of the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher. Then, at the age of 40, Saint Suki moved to Chicago to be a journalist for LGBTQ publications and became a legend after introducing himself as a vampire, fairy, pirate, and Viking.
In his new book, The Memoir of a Groucho Marxist, A Very British Fairy Tale, Saint Suki de la Croix takes us on a magical realist journey through his childhood, growing up near Stonehenge in a world that also gave rise to Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, and The Hobbit. Today, Saint Suki de la Croix, the artist formerly known as Daryl Michael Vincent, finally lifts the veil on his mysterious persona and tells us of his early upbringing in a working-class family in post-World War II England.
Listen as Saint Suki weighs in on the Netflix series The Crown and X-Files' Gillian Anderson's portrayal of Margaret Thatcher, the soap opera of Prince Charles and Lady Diana, and why Queen Elizabeth's family struggles with being human. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hello.
Is this Saint Suki de la Croix?
It's I'm impersonating him. Is that the Puerto Rican drag queen with the muscles?
Ah, yes, your vampire cousin, Faustina.
Yeah, well, bite my ass.
Such a meaty morsel. How you doing, Saint Suki?
Well, I'm sitting out in the sunshine.
Oh, wow. Because you're in Palm Springs, right?
I'm just outside of Palm Springs. I'm in Cathedral City.
Aren't you supposed to be a vampire? Isn't that bad for your health to be out in the sun?
I've never been a fucking vampire.
Yes.
That's just what the press say about me. It's because I look half dead.
I think I recall you and Linda Leachna running around town with both of you wearing fangs at one point in time.
And in the Feast of Fools show, you guys, your biography said you died 500 years ago.
Well, don't read everything you fucking read, you know? Don't believe any of it. If I said it, it's shit, probably. Somebody else wrote that. I never wrote that. I'm not a vampire. Did you know Linda never liked vampires?
She didn't?
No. And she didn't like goth music either.
For the listeners out there, Linda looked like a vampire and she looked like a goth queen.
But she was a very interesting person. When I first moved to Chicago, I came to the performance art scene, open mics and poetry, because that's where it was hot. That's where it was at. And Suki was always front and center, reading outrageously funny and brilliant essays and poems about the gay experience.
I used to read things that they would never publish, you know? I had a secret life at the open mics. I used to do things like the day I fucked an alien on a Greyhound bus. And I used to do a little poem called I Fucked the Dead, because I think everybody's got a bit of necrophilia in them somewhere.
Well, you know, we all love a captive audience.
Yes, we do, yes.
And, you sort of evolved to becoming one of Chicago's premier LGBTQAI+ historians.
Plus? What's the plus? Oh, don't tell
anything
me.
Anything you else. Want it to be, honey.
Anything goes. Anything
fams,
goes.
Vampires,
asexual.
Vikings, pirates. You're a little bit of everything, aren't you? Part vampire, part fairy, part hobbit, part druid.
I'm not a hobbit. I'm a little bit druid, a little bit fairy, well, a lot fairy, actually, and a little bit pirate, yeah, and Viking. I got some Viking in me, or I'd like some Viking in me, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'll say. Well, you have a brand new book that talks, you finally lifting the veil and revealing your assigned name at birth. Can I say it on the show?
Yes. Oh, of course you can.
Daryl Michael Vincent.
That's right. That's when I was born.
You say it was never a secret, but Fausto's known you for 25 years.
I had no idea.
And he had no idea that was your name.
I think he told me
one
time. Yeah, I think you did tell me once, but I was too drunk to pay attention.
Does anybody actually believe that any mother would call their son Suki Delacroix?
Well, we knew, really? We knew you gave yourself the name or it was given to you, but
yeah.
But you know, back in the day, it was, you know, drag queens and characters. The people were just like, "Don't ever dead name me. Don't do that."
It was considered very rude and hostile. So, so it was best to not remember it at all.
Mm. Well, that's other people. You know, that's not me. I really got no secrets. I don't see the point.
But you wound up in Chicago, and you hail from such a far off land. Where fairies are real and the royalty is still a thing, Great Britain, and of the town of Bath in Somerset.
Bath, like a bathroom.
Famous for its bath, right?
I was growing, well, the book is about my childhood growing up with these crazy fucking parents. And in the book, I say I was not born of woman. I actually fell out of a badger's hole in the woods. You know, it's just about this young gay man that was completely alienated because nothing resonated as true. The prince and princess fairy story doesn't work for me. So I used to go to the woods and read. And that's where I actually met the fairies. And now, if you don't believe in fairies, look in a mirror.
Oh, I believe in fairies.
Oh, I do. I do believe in fairies. Everybody say it with me. There's a Peter Pan in all of
it
us.
It is. Yeah, if you believe in fairies, clap your hands.
So I've read your book, and you grew up in the early 50s, in Bath
after
or outside
war.
Of Bath, after the war, and there was a lot of devastation. I don't think people realized, like, things were bombed out. There was, like, warships along the shoreline and stuff. My mom taught school not too far from there in Tredegar, Wales, and I visited Bath with her in 2006. And I remember looking at the pictures, and like she'd have all these pictures of these homes and everything, like barbed wire fences along the shore. And it was just, it was quite stark.
It was. I never really thought about it because the book actually, I started writing about this little boy, little sissy boy growing up in post-World War II Britain. After a few pages, I realized it was me. So I thought that's interesting because I thought I was writing about someone else. So I thought, I wonder where this is going, and I just kept writing. No, I grew up in bomb sites. To get my hair cut every week, my father would carry me because I was too small to climb over the rubble. He would carry me through bombed out houses, bombed out streets to take me to the barbershop. Mm.
It's like, it seems like it's something like Out of the Wall or something like that.
Pink Floyd.
It is. And I grew up at the same time as Roger Waters. I think he might be a little bit older than me, but not much. And that's what we grew up with. And I grew up with a generation, the adult generation I grew up with, were all damaged. Some of them physically, they had one leg or they had, you know, a plate in their head or something. Or some of them, most of them were psychologically damaged. Mm. My mother was clinically insane. And I grew up in a completely alternative reality. My mother was telepathic with kitchen appliances, you know. And the other thing was they were atheists, and they were labor people. My father was a union man and kind of communism. And so it was just and also I grew up surrounded by pagans. My neighbors were druids because I lived near Stonehenge.
And how did the Stonehenge can we call it like the monoliths, a monument? How did that affect you?
Well, I don't know if I'm a spiritual person, but if you go, well, there's other, all over the West Country, there's other places. There's other henges as well they don't tell the tourists about because they don't want them trampled, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just a country that goes back a long way. At the end of my mother's yard, there was an Anglo-Saxon burial ground. I read Alice in Wonderland sitting on an Anglo-Saxon burial ground. And that just seemed normal to me. And of course, Bath was originally built by the Romans, who were pagans, to the goddess Minerva. They built a city there.
Minerva was the goddess of wisdom?
I don't know what she was the goddess of. Minerva, the goddess of bullshit, probably. I don't know. Rather large titties, you know? Type pussies. I don't know what she was the goddess of, but they worshipped her.
Goddess of handicrafts, the professions, the arts, and later war.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of really suits you very well because you're a very crafty bitch. And don't cross St. Suki because she's going to fuck you up.
I might do that. I do know two curses. So I'm only going to tell you about one of the other one. I'm saving the other one. I can give somebody a really bad hemorrhoid flare-up. But I can only do it if I know they have hemorrhoids already. If I try to do it with somebody who does not have hemorrhoids, it comes back on me. Mm. I grew up with a lot of myths and legends.
So did you grow up you grew up by Bath. Did they have like wonderful baths for you guys to like to take baths in?
Yeah, the Roman bathhouse is still there.
Wow. Have you ever went to it as a
gay bathhouse or is it?
No, I went to the Roman bathhouse. You can't get in because the water is. You used to be able to get in. They would let you get in there once a year. But then some little girl, because what it is in Bath, there's hot springs coming out of the ground. So when the Romans got there, they thought, oh, that's good. We'll build a bathhouse.
And in terms of Stonehenge, like for people who are not familiar with the significance of this monument and similar monuments in the UK, what is their like function exactly? It was like a location for rituals, for magic to happen?
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, the Stonehenge is Druids, but they don't know. They just don't know why it's there. It is a religious center for the sun because the sun comes in and hits the altar stone at a certain time of day. So they definitely built it for sun worshippers. But they don't really know what it's about. But all around that area, there's other weird and wonderful places. There's a ring of stones in Avebury, which is a tiny village of about 10 houses. And around the village, there's a ring of stones.
So in a lot of ways, like The Hobbit is a real deal. It's just a metaphor or allegory for British life.
Because Tolkien, who wrote The Hobbit, he lived in England, you know, and he had the same experiences I had with all these old legends and stories. And I was told that I grew up believing if you touched a tree, you made contact with your ancestors.
That's kind of a beautiful idea.
It is.
Only if your ancestors are assholes, then you
don't. No, then you don't do it. And trust me, I've done my ancestry. They're all assholes. I come from a very, very long line of assholes.
Well, you know, people are just, they're fascinated by these monoliths. And even like in Utah, they just discovered somebody put like this, you know, stainless steel monolith right there in the middle
An
of
artist,
this park. And
yeah.
People are like, where did this come from? What's the point of it?
It's a mysterious work of art that was installed in the middle of the desert and was discovered by a surveying drone. And they went to visit it. And of course, they're all like, this is made by a fan of 2001 Space Odyssey. And it's a giant steel monolith.
It's funny you should mention that movie because a neighbor of mine here, who's British, was a Hollywood wig maker.
He made wigs for like 2001 Space Odyssey?
Oh, he made the ape suits for 2001.
Oh, that's fabulous. That scene still doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't remember the film because I took LSD to see it, so I can't remember a damn thing about it, except it was complete crap, in my opinion. But he said that at one point, one of the apes throws up a bone.
Yes.
Or something. And they tried all kinds of people throwing it up, and the one they actually picked was a 12-year-old girl. It's a 12-year-old girl throwing that bone up or whatever it was.
I think it was supposed to be the start of civilization, right? It was the impetus.
So, yes.
And I think somebody gets killed in that scene, right?
So the ape kills another ape with the bone, and that's what civilization starts.
Oh, is that it? Well, civilization hasn't started yet, in my opinion.
We're not quite there yet.
We're not quite there. We're working on it.
It doesn't start until I throw my bone up in the air.
I'm sure you've thrown more than one bone up there, here and there.
I've only got one bone. I mean, I don't know what people are saying about me behind my back, but I've definitely only got the one, which is a shame, isn't it, really? That's why I don't believe in God. If there was a God, I'd have two penises, right?
Would you want two penises?
Yeah, of course I would.
What would you do with the other one? That you're not doing, which you're not satisfied with doing with the one you have.
It's not that I'm not satisfied. It's just I want a photograph. If someone asks me for a dick pic, I want to send a picture of two dicks.
Well, you know, there was a kid who was recently born in a baby that was born in Egypt, I believe, and he has a second penis and like another scrotum, and there's one ball in each. And the current theory of this now is that he absorbed his twin. The other twin stopped developing, but for whatever reason, the penis is there. So that one testicle, if it ever comes around, like, because he's got, you know, a testicle on each penis, might produce the sperm of his twin brother.
Oh my God.
Isn't that wild?
Let me lay this on you. So there was a guy on the internet a couple years ago who became a sensation because he had two full functioning penises. Like, if you photoshopped a second exact dick onto your dick, that's what his genital looked like. And he could fuck two people at a time. Get this. He was bisexual.
Mm. Oh my God.
And he said he'd show it to like some women, and some women would be like, no, thank you. But like, anytime he showed it to a guy, he was just like, I'm all in.
Oh yeah.
Well, and the theory I have is that if you have two penises, the odds are high that you're bisexual because one penis is gay and the other one is straight.
Well, if you have brothers, the more likelihood that you're gay, right?
Yeah. So
if you have a brother, even if he was like you absorbed him.
God, I'd hate to absorb anybody else.
Well, we don't know if we're chimeras ourselves. Like, we have to get biologically tested to find out.
Oh, I can't be bothered with that. I'm too old. I don't care what's going on in me.
That's the thing. Is like those DNA tests that they do, that your cousins do, your conservative family members, because they want to know if they're related to Hitler or if they have any black people in their family.
Right.
Even if you don't do that DNA test yourself, you practically have already sold and given away your genetic information.
My sister did it.
Yeah.
And I know she registered because she found one of our cousins. And I was just like, God damn it. Now, you know,
your DNA is
my DNA is in the system.
The reason it's so cheap is because the pharmaceutical companies eventually are planning to develop medicine and other types of healthcare strategies that they're, you know, for money with this information. So that's why they're encouraging people to freely give away their most precious commodity, their own DNA.
Yeah. In France, it's completely banned. Like, you can't, like, they don't want
you can't get a DNA test
at all. And that's why when my sister had hers done, ours came back like 48%, you know, Scandinavian. And then it was like 30-some percent, like, broadly Western European because of the French ancestry.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think I'm entitled to some Facebook money coming my way because from Illinois, because they did some kind of biometric measuring, which is illegal here in Illinois. And I think everybody was entitled to compensation.
Wow. All this is going on behind my back.
Mm.
Well, that's how I feel. Like, even people who do DNA tests on their dogs are secretly racist.
Dogs?
Yeah, they want to know. It's like, my dog is 12% this and 20% that. And I'm like, dogs are all the same. They're all just, you know, they've been bred.
Well, they're
like British monarchy.
But
you know?
People are curious about it. And sometimes they're like, well, I want to make sure they don't have any health things. But like, once you like mix a dog with something else, a lot of those disparities go away. You know? Like,
that's why they got Princess Diana into the family. Look at Prince Charles. God.
You want to go there?
Oh, we're going to go there. Listen, I am obsessed with The Crown, and I'm dying to talk about the show with you, but we really need to get into your book some more.
Okay.
You call yourself a Groucho Marxist, and Groucho Marx was famously known for his quote to the Friars Club in Beverly Hills, "I don't care to belong to any club that will have me as a member."
Right.
Which I think actually suits you very well.
It does, actually, but nobody's asked me to be a member of anything.
You've described yourself as an iconoclast, someone who breaks precious symbols and ideas.
Yeah, because it's boring, isn't it? You know, I live completely outside of any religion or philosophy. I just don't subscribe to any of that bullshit, especially religion. I read the Bible because I never had the Bible at school. You know, I read the Bible later as a book, and I thought, I can't do this shit.
Tell me you didn't read the whole. I mean, you can't read the whole Bible.
No, I've read the whole Bible. I read it as a book. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's just what version?
What drugs were you on?
You did that. It's so
acid, LSD, amphetamine sulfate. Oh, you want a list? Adrenamol, all the ones people don't use anymore. Mm. I've read the Quran. That's a load of bullshit as well. I mean, I can't live by those stupid rules. I covet my neighbor's ass, and that's all there is to it.
What made you want to read those books, though? Because the books are not a light read. It's not.
Because they. No. It's like, well, I've read War and Peace as well by Tolstoy. That's even worse. No, I read them because they were important because they were important to a lot of people. So mm-hmm. I thought, what's the fuss about? Because my parents wouldn't even have one in the house. You know, my parents wouldn't even go into church. They were atheists. So I came out of it. And when I had my kids, you know, it got to their religious lessons at school. And I said, and I talked it over with my wife, ex-wife, and I said, you know, should we send them to that? And I explained to them, you know, we don't believe this, but you should go along and make your own mind up. Well, they only lasted three classes when they realized it was just not for them.
To this point in your life, looking back on your relationships and sexual adventures, do you particularly identify as bisexual or anything?
Well, that's a weird thing. One thing, I really don't like all these stupid labels, but we have to have them so that we, you know what we're doing. I had a boyfriend. I met this amazing woman, and I married the woman. We had two children. We were together for 10 years, and then a young man came along. So I moved over to him. I've never had any guilt, because I never had religion. What am I guilty about? Mm-hmm. I never had any guilt. I had guilt about leaving my ex-wife, but she knew I was bisexual. But then I would put it like this. First part of my life, I was capable of having sex with either gender, but I can't really fall in love with a woman properly. I can only fall in love with a man.
Aww.
When I was young, you know, it was the 60s, I'd fuck a hole in an ice bucket. You know, if I can outrun it and tip it out of the wheelchair, I fucked it, you know?
So you were young, I assume you were a young teenage guy. Were you doing the English tradition of cottaging? Was there a park or a cottage you would go to? A toilet is what we would call it.
No,
here, right?
No, but yeah, it's a tea room, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You call it here, I think. No, I don't think I did, but I knew where they all were. You know, everybody knew the cottaging toilets. And when there was one in Bath in a park, Victoria Park, Queen Victoria Park. And everybody went there. And when they pulled it down, there was queens came from everywhere to get a brick. You go to Bath and you go to an old queen's house. They have a little bit of plumbing on the mantelpiece or a brick or something from the old cottaging toilet. And that was a cottaging toilet back over 100 years.
Mm. Well, I think they say that those things became popular when they started. I think it was Victorian times, right? They started to build those kinds of things, and they instantly became a place where, you know, queer men would go and have sex.
Right, right.
There was a movie called Steam, and they said, wherever there is privacy and darkness, men will find the comforts of other men.
Well, that's true. I mean, Quentin Crisp said in The War, when there was a blackout, people just grabbed the nearest thing in the street and fucked it.
Sometimes people talk about like this identity, this rise of this gay identity with gay liberation, and that it stopped a lot of straight men from experimenting like they would have in the past. Did you find that same kind of experience that, like, as the gay identity grew, that men were less willing to experiment?
Nothing is going to dampen a man's sexual desires, unfortunately.
More willing?
You know, I wish we could control ourselves a lot better. For one thing, I find it very attractive if they just have sex and leave, you know?
Yeah.
That's a nice thing, because you get,
nice.
And I am a bit like that.
That's a very male thing to do, isn't it? Fausto's a chatter. Like, he'll want to hang out afterwards.
I don't
want
to talk to them while we're having sex. I want to talk to them after we've had sex.
Yes, which I think is very strange.
Well, the interesting things is, like, times that I've had sex with men who mostly identified as heterosexual or military kinds, they're very demanding. They're like, let's get it over and done with. And you're just like, it's as if they had never seen a dick in their entire life. And it is sort of like when we feed our dog, you know, you can make the most ornamental, beautiful meal or just open them a can of dog food and the dog will eat it as if it was his last meal. And I think that's something that, you know, straight identifying men and military guys have in common is that they feel like life is very delicate or precious. And so they fuck as if it was the last thing they're going to do that day forever. Whereas, you know, queer people tend to have, we're the vampires in some regard. We see the bigger path. We have a more worldly view. And so we're like, well, if this sex doesn't work out today,
yeah,
there's something down the road that might be better. And I really appreciate now that we're in the middle of a pandemic. Since the COVID pandemic started, right, I started reading a lot about the Spanish flu and the musical Chicago and the song Nowadays, where they're like, everything's great. And I'm like, yeah, that song and that time period happened after a pandemic where millions of people died. So imagine if you sang that song like 5 years down the road, because if you think about this vaccine.
I worry. Well, we're all worried about the vaccine. We're all worried about it. You know, I'm worried about having it.
Right.
Well, I'm 69, and you start changing when you get older, and you start not. Well, I've never really given a fuck about much anyway, but I give even less of a fuck now. You know, I feel very alienated from the gay community, and I'm loving it. It's great.
Well, that's a thing that I really love about you, and attracted me to you as a person when I first met you, is that you were sort of like really comfortable and willing to sort of laugh at the ridiculousness of everyday life and the LGBTQ identity.
Well, I can sum it up in one sentence. Life is just one big fucking joke.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's serious elements to it, but if you don't laugh, if you don't see the funny side of, well, kill yourself, you know? If you can't laugh at everything, kill yourself. I think young people are very serious at the moment. I do not talk or write, and I'm not going to do it now either, about trans issues, because whatever you say is wrong at the moment. So I just don't write about it at all.
It might not be wrong now, but it'll be wrong in 5 years.
Yeah, in 5 years, they should go digging through my old stuff. You know, I'm sure they can completely destroy my career. Like, I don't give a fuck.
So you were, what were you, like 17 years old when they made gay sex legal in the UK? Is that right? Around that age?
Yeah, I was. How did you know that?
Well, because I did the math, right?
You got your fucking calculator out again, dude.
What was that like? Were you like, shoo?
No, I didn't care. I don't care whether it's, why would you care if it's legal or not? I mean, it makes it easier in a way, but it's not going to stop anybody. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of people still, they were still gay before some committee somewhere, some Politburo decided they were going to legalize it.
So you were probably like 19 or 20 when Stonewall happened. Were you aware of Stonewall living in the UK, or was that like something you learned later?
I can tell you where I was. I can tell you exactly where I was when Stonewall happened.
Where were you?
I was at a rock festival watching Led Zeppelin. I've got a poster of the festival. I haven't got a poster, but I found a poster online of the festival, and it's June 28th, 1969. So that's where I was.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you were like, were you high and drunk at the time, listening to great music?
I wasn't. I wouldn't have been drunk, but I was probably on acid. Yeah, I probably was. I mean, most of the time I was.
What was Led Zeppelin's catalog of songs at that time period?
It was before. It was actually, I think, before the album came out. The first album came out.
Oh, so
they hadn't been around long. They had been around long. The first time I saw them, there was I went to see a band called The Nice, and there was this other band opening for them, and we thought they were shit. They were called Led Zeppelin.
Were you aware of like Stonewall? Were you like at the time? Were you like, oh wow, this is big, or this is crazy, this is wild? Like, yeah.
I read about Stonewall in the International Times hippie newspaper in London, and I'm going to have to say this now. I did write a book about that. It's called Out of the Underground, Homosexuals, the Radical Press, and the Rise and Fall of the Gay Liberation Front. Mm. It's on, both my books are on Ratney Goodyarn's Press. But I did write about the hippie press and how they dealt with Stonewall, because that's where I first read about Stonewall, was in one of these hippie newspapers in London.
Mm. So it wasn't like the mainstream press was even covering it at the time.
I don't know. No, they weren't covering it. It wasn't mentioned in Chicago. The Tribune never wrote about it. It was on page 33 of the New York Times. It was a very small event.
So it was interesting that the need for alternative press very much dovetail with the rise of the modern gay rights movement. And you,
that's right,
here moving from the UK to Chicago, became a central figure in gay publishing.
Who, me?
Yeah. you were writing well, half of the things for a while.
I did. History, I think, was yours, right?
You know, I got when I got to Chicago as a reporter, I went to buy a book about the history of lesbian and gay Chicago, and there wasn't one. So I wrote one. That makes sense. I mean, it was just a practical thing to me. Someone has to write this book. I waited a couple of years of doing the column I was doing, just when I was interviewing LGBTQs plus, when I was interviewing all those people and putting them in the paper. I thought it might inspire one of these really old Chicago people to write a book, but they didn't write a book, so fuck them. Somebody had to write the book. So I wrote the book.
Well,
I didn't know it was going to be quite as successful as it was.
What was one of the big surprises or anything that you really learned that you were like, wow, I can't believe this happened in Chicago about the history of gay Chicago?
I interviewed a 95-year-old man. He died the week after I interviewed him. And when he was very, very young and underage, he went to an illegal speakeasy during Prohibition and saw a drag show.
Oh, wow.
And I set out to prove that it happened. And because they're not in the phone book, they were speakeasies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had this idea that when I read that when Prohibition ended, some of these speakeasies just opened the doors and they were legal. There was whole bars just open the next day. And I thought, I wonder, because I knew the name of it. It was called the K9 Club. And I thought, I wonder if that bar ever opened. So I went back and looked at the newspapers. And sure enough, it opened. And this in my book, Chicago Whispers, there's actually an ad from the paper. Of course, Mayor Kelly at the time closed it down after about 6 months because that wasn't going to be allowed to happen. It was obviously too much fun, you know?
Don't have too much fun.
For those tight-ass politicians. But no, I found that interesting. The whole thing in African-American gay history is fascinating. You know, it's just all the jazz clubs and blues singers and all that stuff. Just wonderful, you know. But I wrote the book purely because nobody else had written it.
And in terms of the city of Chicago, like, and gay publishing, it reached a zeitgeist, I would describe, as when the gay games came to Chicago, which was a hubbaloo. And Mayor Daley really had his hopes set on bringing the Olympics to Chicago and wanted to do that by showing that we could host the gay games.
Right.
It was met with a lot of controversy because activists at the time felt that inviting the Olympics was to invite financial ruin to the city. And thankfully, we never actually got that. But I remember the time period, it was something that a lot of progressive journalists and people felt very at odds because the major gay publication that you worked for, Windy City Times, was instrumental in bringing the gay games. And it was a controversial move to bring that because it was understood that it was a rehearsal or an audition for the Olympics.
Well, look, I was not working for Windy City Times when the gay games came out. I was working for the Chicago Free Press. Now, there's a story I don't want to talk about.
Well, I think it's interesting. Jesus Christ. So I was also an employee of Chicago Free Press as a graphic designer. And that publication had a lot of problems. And one of them was drug abuse was rampant.
Crystal meth specifically.
It was.
You cannot overestimate. I was there at the end. You gone when I was there.
I was completely gone. I remember that you were writing for a lot of publications. I understood that you were working for Windy City Times during the gay games, but I guess I'm mistaken with that.
No. No, I never had anything to do with the gay games. And as far as I know, the Chicago Free Press had no access to the gay games.
Yeah.
They were denied access to the gay games. I suppose I can't really talk about that either, but they were. They weren't allowed to go and photograph or anything. Yeah, I'm not.
I went there. I photographed and interviewed people for our podcast. Well, it was not like I don't think they wanted to go. I think part of that was there was a rivalry between
because the other the newspaper sponsored it, right?
Yeah. So it was and part of it is like, you know, Chicago Free Press went out of business several times and was kept being bought by different
by somebody who
wealthy,
just came out of the closet.
Somebody who just came out of the closet.
I'm going to change the gay world by owning a newspaper. Here, let me do some drugs.
It was a bunch of people that could not handle their drugs at all, mm-hmm. and it was just a mess. You know, just a mess. You know, we're not going to say his name, but the owner always had Fox.
Well, you can
TV
always say
on.
Allegedly and say their name.
I'm not saying anything. I'm telling you, we always had Fox TV on there. He had a TV with Fox News on it.
Yeah, he was a conservative Republican.
I remember coming to visit Fausto at work, and they had this long marble stairway to go up the stairs, right? It was like, because it was on the second floor from the street level, and he'd have these two pit bulls just at the top of the stairs just staring at you as you're walking up, and you're like, if these dogs jumped on me, and like I'd be like, I'm like, this is weird.
They were not fixed either.
No.
And there was one time,
No, he kept him away from me because I told him I knew. Back in the 60s, I trained with the Yippies what to do with police dogs, and I know how to kill a dog.
How do you kill a dog?
And I told him. I don't want to.
Okay.
Well, I could tell you, but I don't want anybody to do it. I don't want anybody to do it.
No.
You get the dog on its back, grabs both its front legs, and pull them apart.
Oh, my God, that's graphic. Don't do that, people.
Yeah. I just, because, you know,
do
dogs
it.
Sometimes they...
Don't
they,
do that at home.
No, don't do that. You know, because, you know, if a dog is attacking me and Jesse sometime, I don't know.
And this is the thing, like, I wanted to get your insight on, because you were neck deep in Chicago's LGBTQ press, is that now it is non-existent.
Yes.
So all of them have gone out of business. Windy City Times has moved up to online only, but of course, they diminish the journalism and the writing. And so part of it is like, you know, it doesn't feel very good to have corporations that historically have betrayed us by not covering the topics and ideas and people that we need to know and learn about, being responsible for that. So now we're relying on the Chicago Tribune. We're relying on Time Magazine,
Condé Nast.
Newsweek, Condé Nast to cover LGBT news. And I think that's a loss. You know, the fact that we don't have Windy City Times or Chicago Free Press as institutions.
It is a loss because we had to put our trust in them and they could turn on us at any point, as they have done many times in the past. You know, straight people can turn on us anytime.
Mm.
And do you think, like, if that were to happen, we would be able to respond in the way that we did historically, or we would be... Because part of me is like, seems everybody wants to be an Instagram influencer these days than actually do any kind of journalism.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're asking me at the wrong time, because after this year with the Trump stuff and the virus, I have pretty much lost all faith in humanity, you know, because this is just ridiculous. People not wearing masks. I mean, I don't know what all this is about. So
with the Spanish flu, it happened too.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago. Do we not learn from mistakes? But apparently, you know, there's 70 million people in this country with their heads up their ass, you know?
Mm.
You can pretty much count on, at the very least, what happened with the Spanish flu happening with COVID. So either three things will happen. Either we will effectively fight it and the pandemic will be over and lives will be saved. Or we will get have set very unrealistic expectations and people will give up on it and lives will be lost, or the pandemic will continue to range on much longer than we expect it to. I mean, we were promised an HIV vaccine when we were young and there's still not one out there. We have PrEP, but, you know, that's not a vaccine.
Right. And I don't know what I can say about that. You know, it's just people are more stupid. I always thought people were stupid, but I'm stunned at the stupidity of these people.
Well, you lived in the UK when Margaret Thatcher rose to power, as we've seen in this season of The Crown, Gillian Anderson as Margaret Thatcher.
Gillian Anderson.
Is
that Gillian Anderson?
So what was it like for your experience, personal experience, living through the reign of the Iron Lady?
I spent 11 years trying to get rid of her.
Yeah.
I was on every protest. I was in the anti-apartheid group because she would not ban goods coming in from South Africa. I was at every demonstration you can possibly imagine. And I worked against her continuously. She was dreadful. She was a hideous, hideous person. And I think if you're talking about The Crown, you judge it, to judge it as a TV show, it's very well done. To judge it as a historical acumen, document, it's pretty accurate, you know. I mean, they are a horrible group of people.
The British monarchy, you mean?
Yeah. A horrible, horrible group of people. They're not horrible people. Let me get this right. The monarchy should have gone years ago. I mean, I'm with the French. Cut their heads off. and the Russians lined theirs up and shot them, and that was it. They were gone. That was out of the way. Fine. End of that story. But we didn't do that, so we're stuck with these fucking goons, you know? But as human beings, I feel nothing but pity for them. I mean, what a horrible family to be born into, you know? And it is pretty accurate. I mean, they're just dreadful people.
Do you remember when that guy broke into the Queen's palace to talk to her because he was struggling with poverty and Margaret Thatcher's policies?
That's right. Yeah, no, I remember that happening. Yeah, and I remember the one thing that did surprise me was I knew that the two relatives were in the loony bin, the nut house, but I didn't know there was more than two. I thought it was just the two older ones, but apparently there were more of their family there. And they had them marked down as dead.
Mm. So the journalists wouldn't go looking into them and trying to find things out.
Well, because they were ashamed because one part of the family was so inbred. You know, that they were completely fucking gaga, you know, or they were differently challenged or whatever, you know, they were just different. And they didn't want, they thought that would bring shame on the family.
And so in the fourth season of The Crown, we see Princess Margaret discover that the family had effectively whisked away the undesirables of their own blood and made them disappear. And which sets the tone for this dysfunctional melodrama. I can imagine that, you know, for British people, if it must feel good to have a major television show really lay it all out, the complicated relationship that British people have with the monarchy.
Yeah, but I don't know what they think of it in England. I mean, it's obviously controversial, people. Mm-hmm. The Margaret Thatcher fans were saying she wasn't that horrible. She was, and she later, after she was gone, she, I believe, had Alzheimer's, which is an awful thing to have, like Ronald Reagan, you know. But no, she was that. That's I feel chills watching. Was it Gillian? Whatever her name is,
Gillian Anderson chills. From the X Files.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching her do Margaret Thatcher, it brings back all these horrible memories for me.
She was interviewed by Terry Garr on Fresh Air, asked her, how did you approach the accent for Margaret Thatcher? Mm. And she said that, you know, because the real Margaret Thatcher doesn't have this kind of breathy voice. Gillian said that she wanted to give her a sigh, that this exhaustion that she has. And she does the accent on the show, and it sounds like Voldemort coming after Harry Potter.
That's probably where the actor came up with it. He's like, who's the scariest person I know? He's probably like, Margaret Thatcher, let me imitate her.
How do you feel about Gillian's Margaret Thatcher accent affectation?
I think she's accurate. And I heard she's American. Is that true?
She is. She's from Chicago.
Well, she went to Northwestern University, but she also, I think, did spend time as a young child in the UK as well. So it's, right. You know, and she does a lot of television work in the UK. She's in a great series called The Fall, where she plays a North Ireland, right? Northern Ireland, like a detective, basically. And she's investigating a murderer. And the murderer is that hot guy from 50 Shades of Grey. And so they have like a little bit of a romance there. So, and he's so hot and sexy in this.
And then she plays the polar opposite, a very liberal sex therapist in the Netflix series Sex Education, where she embarrasses her son constantly as he brings friends from school home and psychoanalyzes them.
And Margaret Thatcher was known for being so terrible because she was a union buster, right? She didn't like the union.
Yeah, she busted the miners' union, but there was the miners' union was a big mistake for her taking that on, because there's such a romantic. It's so a part. She attacked everything that was a part of the British tradition. She attacked the National Health Service, which has never recovered from the damage she did. And she attacked the miners' union. And these are all people we hold up as important people, you know? And she went for that. She basically, she wanted to be like America.
And she had a close relationship with Ronald Reagan, right?
Yeah, I was there. I threw a brick at his car.
Some AIDS activists do give her credit, because when they showed her the information on whether they could give intravenous drug users
needles,
like the needle exchange program, and they're like, well, we'd save a lot of money if these people don't get HIV, and so she approved it, and so in that sense she did get some credit, but she was all about the money, right? She didn't really care about
people's lives,
their feelings. Yeah. It was all austerity, austerity, austerity.
Well, she didn't have any empathy with people. She was like Trump. There was no empathy there. It was just missing. I don't know why. I don't know. Maybe she got dropped on her head as a baby or something more than once. Something happened because she had no empathy. It was just, she was like a freak. But freaks shouldn't be running the country, you know?
No, they definitely shouldn't.
Well, I mean,
she was a damaged person, you know?
Well, do you think the British monarchy is like more on the side of Brexit and sort of, you know, because there's this idea of British exceptionalism and imperialism.
I'll tell you, the royal family, as far as I know, they're certainly not homophobic, and they're absolutely not racist. Because a lot of the Commonwealth is in black countries, you know, Africa and that. They're not any of those things. I think it's interesting that we see them as human beings in the Crown. That's interesting. But they're human beings that are incredibly flawed, you know. I mean, Margaret, I do know, I was at a party with Princess Margaret once. I never spoke to the woman. But I was at a party in the early 70s. She hung around Bath, and because her boyfriend lived there, his name was Roddy Llewellyn. He was a bit of a hippie. He lived in a commune that I used to go to, and he also owned a quarter share in a restaurant. And so she was always around in Bath. And I remember being at a party, and someone said the Queen's sister, that's what they called her, the Queen's sister, was in the next room. And I looked in because I wanted to see her, you know, and she was smoking a big joint. And the only reason I was at the party was because we were selling dope. My friend was a dope dealer. Yes.
Well, she was.
You could say I sold to the minor, the royals, you know.
Well, she was famous for drinking and doing drugs, right?
Oh, yeah. No, she was outrageous. The woman was outrageous. It was really interesting. And I think she comes over quite well in The Crown.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't she also noted for being bisexual?
Yes. I spoke to, well, certainly her husband was. Snowden was bisexual because, I wonder if what if I can mention his name? Oh, fuck, he's a long way away. And there was a person, very rich person outside of Bath called Jeremy Fry. And he used to have threesomes with Snowden and Margaret. But I actually once met the policewoman who guarded Margaret the day before she married Lord Snowden. She guarded her. She stood, had to stand outside of her bedroom. And she told me she was in there with a woman.
Oh, wow.
On the night before she married her. She was, but they're all trapped, aren't they? They're all. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't talk about the gay son either, do they, Edward? You know, nothing's ever told with his fake fucking marriage.
Mm-hmm. But they're saying that and the portrayal of the royal family is that the major source of this dysfunction is that Queen Elizabeth had very little time for her family, being made queen at such a young age, and so a lot of people are talking about. In terms of, you know, eventually, you know, when she passes away, which could be any day now, King Charles, they don't want King Charles to happen and to
Prince
give them
Charles to be
Prince
king.
Charles to be king. They want Prince William to be king. And a lot of people are saying that would be terrible for William's young family because his responsibilities would dramatically increase and you get the circle of dysfunction happening again.
Yeah, but they're brought up to be royals. This is what happened. Mm-hmm. They're brought up from day one to be monarchy. That's a completely different education. It's all about tradition. Yeah, they do a few things like, you know, geography and other lessons at school, but mostly it's about being royal. It's about etiquette and all that stuff, tradition, what do you say when you meet a bishop and all this shit. That's what they learned. That's where they're... And when Europe had queens all over it, kings and queens all over Europe, the Dutch monarchy, the Russian monarchy, all those kids were brought up to be royals, and they were brought up in the monarchy. So when what would happen is one of Queen Victoria's daughters would marry the son of the Russian czar, and it would all be settled because they both got brought up as monarchy. But all the monarchies in Europe have gone now. There's some still there, but like the Dutch monarchy is still there, but they're just regular people now. They're not really kings and queens, you know? So what happened was when this generation, Andrew and Charles, had to get married, they couldn't go to Europe for people that were brought up to be monarchy. They had to marry beneath themselves, which explains Fergie and Lady Diana, because Lady Diana and Fergie are not aristocrats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She was the cleaning lady.
There's so many ladies in England. I got drunk once with Viscountess Long. We got shit faced on gin. And I used to go out with a lady out drinking in there. So they're common as muck, as we say in England. They're not special. So they married beneath themselves. And Fergie and Lady Diana were not suited to be members of the royal family because they weren't brought up to it. So what Diana was surprised because Charles was fucking somebody else. They've always fucked somebody else. She's supposed to put up with it.
And she was kind of naive, right? Because she was young and she had like as a child, she had a poster of Prince Charles on her wall. So she thought she was going to marry her, you know, knight in shiny armor, prince.
It's like marrying, who is it? All those girls that fell in love with Justin Bieber.
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine if you had married Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Shit.
You know? I can't. Yeah. So anyway, he married. She was unsuitable for the monarchy.
So she
got pissed off. She thought she was going into an ordinary marriage like her parents were married, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you know, who hasn't made a bad decision at the age of 20?
She was 19,
oh,
I think.
God,
she
kidding?
Was 20 years old when she married Prince Charles, but accepted the proposal at the age of 19.
But he didn't want to marry her. He was having an adulterous affair with Camilla and that. And I didn't know Camilla was that pretty when she was young.
That is very generous casting, I have to say.
Well, when you compare her to Diana, you know, there's a difference. But I think when she was younger, she was attractive. But also, too, I think Charles, the crown makes it seem as though he was really much in mourning for his uncle who had just been murdered. And the family had really wanted him to get married. So I think he was in despair. Right?
Yeah, well, you know, I've forgotten the name of the one that got blown up.
Mountbatten.
Mountbatten, yeah. I remember at the time someone said to me, did you know Mountbatten had dandruff? And I said, no, how do you know that? He said, because his head and shoulders were floating in the water.
That's pretty terrible.
Let me tell you, Mac Batten had secrets too.
Yeah?
And they involved very young people.
Oh.
That was a rumor.
Oh. There were two young boys on that boat. Is that why you think they had two young boys on the boat with him?
Yeah, that was family members.
Well, one was a family member, the other one was an assistant, according to the Crown.
Yeah.
And I heard that the Queen Mother, like everybody that surrounded the Queen Mother, all of the people that worked for her were all gay men.
If you go in certain bars in London, you'll see all the palace workers there. Mm. Buy them a few drinks and you'll get all the gossip you need.
If Charles becomes king,
queen.
Well, no, I guess, does that make Camilla Parker Bowles the queen? Married.
No, that would depend. That would depend on him, but he would probably also have to get approval from the church and everything, right?
Well, what they're saying is that she wouldn't be queen immediately. That once King Charles becomes king,
he could make her a queen.
He would make her a queen.
I don't think it's up to him.
Well, because like the queen made, Prince, right? Prince Philip.
I very much doubt that the queen has any power in that way. She can say to Parliament, I would like to make this person, he could go to Parliament and say, I'd like to make Camilla a queen or whatever. And they decide. Mm-hmm. The monarchy don't have any power in England.
You know, talking about this with you, I feel like we're talking about RuPaul's Drag Race or the Real Housewives franchise. You know what I'm saying?
The Real Housewives of Buckingham Palace?
And it makes about as much sense as if you made, you know, some dumb drag queen from RuPaul's Drag Race the queen of the land, you know?
That's right. And they think they're queens.
Yeah, they do in their minds. But, you know, in terms of like influencing policy. And certainly, you know, right now, you can argue that a lot of the drag queens are very progressive minded, but that doesn't guarantee it. And people are like saying, well, maybe, you know, Shishi LaRue should be queen of, and I'm sorry, not, Shishi Devane should be queen of the country. And I'm just going like, well, I think the idea of putting reality TV stars or soap opera stars in leadership positions doesn't seem like a wise idea in the long run. But why is that such a bad idea, I guess?
Why? Because it's stupid.
Why is stupidity lead to stupid decisions?
I don't know. Like I said, this year I've lost faith in the human race. I don't know what's going on. I can't believe that people are this fucking dumb, you know?
Were you excited for Princess Diana when she sort of emerged as a sort of a gay icon and embracing people through the AIDS crisis?
Well, she hugged a baby. I mean, I suppose she hugged a baby. She hugged a baby, you know. I suppose so, but...
Because Elton John credits her with a lot.
Don't even mention that man's name in front of me. That little fat little dwarf, you know? Stick to writing songs and shut your fucking mouth up. Because he's just a wretched human being.
Is he?
You know, I can't stand him. You know, but you know, he's a great songwriter and all that bullshit. I just wish he'd stick to that and not make... He did Rush Limbaugh's wedding.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
$100 million for it.
Right there.
Saintsuki, would you read or perform at Rush Limbaugh's wedding if you got paid $1 million?
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. No, absolutely not.
I'd have a hard time saying no to that gig.
I would absolutely find it quite easy to say no.
Because $1 million does pay a lot of bills.
Well, can I read I Fuck the Dead?
Yeah.
No. If I did it, I would give the money away in a very public way. Mm. You know, I give it to the Trevor Project.
All those superstars, they play concerts for these oligarchs in Moscow. They go to the Middle East and play for these dictators. So it's not very uncommon.
And I think that's what, like, Madonna lost her mind because, you know, after decades of sort of like secretly performing for oligarchs in Russia and all over the world, she's sort of seeing the impact of all these terrible people on the other things that she loves, which is music, culture, and the working class world, the people of the world who work, you know. And so, like, we've manifested this Madonna, you know, on social media, that is somebody who is strikes me as profoundly confused or unhappy or
They're anxious. Just not politically aware. Yeah. They're not politically aware. They don't not really understand politics, and they don't understand the world. It seems that some people make a bit of money and just leave everybody else behind. You know, they just move up the ladder and just socialize with people up the ladder on that level. I've never done that. As you well know, I'll talk to anybody. You know, I used to go to those AIDS benefits. I was always in the kitchen talking to the kitchen staff because they were more interesting, you know.
Those AIDS benefits used to be a hell of a lot of fun. And for people who don't realize that, it was an opportunity for Chicago's community. I don't know if this was true in other cities, but it was easy to volunteer for it. It had a lot of people who were involved in activism, as well as people who were had a lot of money but wanted to align themselves with progressive LGBTQ politics. And so it was a really exciting time and mixture. And then, of course, they would always bring a celebrity to perform for a crowd of about 300 people that always resulted in a very awkward performance.
Right.
So you would have Jennifer Holliday performing to a recording of "And I'm Telling You," and an audience member runs up to the stage and is screaming in her face as she's trying to finish the song. I don't know if you were there for that, but that to me is one of the greatest things.
No, you see, I used to get a pass to go and photograph everybody.
Yeah.
I don't think I was ever at those things more than 10 minutes at the max. I would go in, photograph everybody, and leave.
Yeah, you always was a social butterfly, the red communist butterfly, as in your book.
I used to be, people thought I was everywhere, but they didn't see that I was only there for 5 minutes. Then I'd leave.
And go to another party or just go to a different bar? Well,
no, it wasn't another party. I would go and photograph whatever. I wasn't in the gay community. I always say this. I was not in the gay community in Chicago. I was outside of the gay community. I was reporting on it. That was my job. I would go into the gay community, do what I had to do, schmooze with bar owners so we could get ads, photograph people, and do all that stuff in there. But I was never a part of that. I never got invited to any of their private barbecues or anything. You know, I wasn't involved in it.
Well, part of it is I've gone to some of those private barbecues, and it's like hanging out with British monarchy without the education, you know, without the sophistication.
I mean, they never understood me. They all wanted to be in a newspaper. You know, I went into, there was a pride march one year, and all the politicians that were going on the march were meeting in Sidetrack. And I had to go and photograph.
That's a gay bar in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had to go and photograph. And so I went in with my camera. And you know, all these politicians, they have a couple of little gay boys doing their handiwork, you know. And I went in, and somebody grabbed me and dragged me over to their politician and said, "Take a photograph." And I said, "No." I photographed every other politician in that place.
Why? Because I'm sickening.
You don't drag me across the room. You don't lay your hands on me, you know? So, no.
Well, now you're living in Palm.
Didn't go in.
Now you're living in Palm Springs. You have a gorgeous swimming pool. You're retired.
I do.
And you have a hard drive full of photos of people you have no idea who they are.
No, not a clue. Well, some of them I know who they
are. And so you post them on social media, which is a lot of fun.
You're like, who are these
and
people?
You're like, I have no idea.
Well, a lot of those people, I get these messages from people, "Take that picture down. I was fat."
And you're like, you still are.
I've lost this weight. All this weight, you know, and I never take him down. Oh, that was my old boyfriend, you know. I don't want to be, you know, and all this stuff. We fell out. We had a terrible breakup. I don't give a shit. These are my fucking photographs. I'll put them up. But it's, I think, and some, most people have never seen those photographs before because only some of them were in the newspaper.
Yeah.
So a lot of them, people don't even remember they were photographed.
Back in the day, that was everything. You're like, oh my God, did you see me? I was in the newspaper. It was a big deal because there was no Instagram, no Facebook. If you wanted to be like known, you were in the paper.
The only reason that's have photographs of myself in drag from that time period is because you or Jason Smith took them. And one of my favorite photos of me of all time is of me and my mother in full drag. And you came for 5 minutes and took a picture of us together. And it is the most beautiful. And you wrote genetic makeup, Fausto and his mother in drag. And it's such a beautiful photograph. And you took that with a digital camera, which was a rarity at the time. And it was such a beautiful gift that you gave me and my family. And my mother has that framed hanging in her house.
Well, when I was managing editor at Night Spots, I said no famous people on the cover.
So that's why you picked me.
I actually put you with that big guy, remember?
I love
you
that photograph, yeah. Before it was Bears, they called it Mirth and Girth. And so you called me on the phone and you're saying, you were like, Fausto, come meet me at, what was it, Jackhammer, was it?
I think it was Jackhammer.
It was called something else before.
It might have been Touche. Touche or Numbers.
Numbers it was. Go meet me at Numbers as a party for Mirth and Girth and wear something fabulous. And so I quickly dressed up in drag. And that's the thing about, like, you know, when Suki Delacroix wanted you to show up in drag, you didn't ask questions. And well, you knew you would have a great time. So you asked me and Victoria Lamar to show up in drag to kick off a LGBT tour. We showed up in drag for anything, you know. And you always like had drinks for
the
us.
Bus tour.
Yeah, the bus tour.
The history tour of Chicago, right?
It was the history
tour.
Yeah,
you poured champagne all over the... I phoned her up and said, I want you to come down and get rid of all the previous homophobia that may be laying around on the bus.
And wildly unsuccessful at it, by the way. But
I know you poured like champagne or something all over the sidewalk. And the people who were organizing the tour, I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, they were gasping.
Well, they shouldn't have asked me to do it, should they?
Listen, those things were legendary.
Where did you take people on the gay history bus tour? You're like, this is the alley where people get fucked?
No, you took them to Women and Children First bookstore, like actual interesting places. It was not.
No, we went to Henry Gerber's house. We went to the old gay neighborhood at Clark and Division. And then the neighborhood at Diversity and Clark. We went all over the place, Gerber Hart Library. But
it was very much an illustrated storytelling. So it was as important the story that you told, the history that you told, and you took the crowd, you know, it was a full bus of people, to these locations and gave them a deeper insight to places they already have seen but not maybe understood that there was a past to them. You know, and in a lot of ways, your life, you know, whether you agree with this or not, has been in the realm of legend. There are a lot of people here in Chicago who speak about you as a very mysterious figure. And so seeing the veil lifted to some degree in your very British fairy tale in your book is a really beautiful gift to sort of getting to know who the real Saint Suki Delacroix is.
Well, yeah, I before I left, some guy saw me on the street and he said, oh my God, I've been reading your stuff for years. I didn't think you existed.
You do look like a like a puppet, you know.
What did he, I mean, how would you produce stuff if you didn't exist? But there was
he
like,
didn't
was
a, think was I was real.
Man.
Yeah. He didn't think that Suki existed. He thought it was just people in the office making stuff up.
I remember
other people, you know.
Speaking of making things up, I'll ask you this because I remember you telling us this story once. You said that you had a friend who was the official cocksucker for a Chicago gang. I'm not going to say their name, because I don't want to get anybody hurt and I don't want to get killed. And I was, and you said anytime anybody needs their cock sucked, they'd call him up, and there he was. And I was just like, but really? Was that a true story?
I'll tell you what happened. He was a bartender. I'm not going to give his name. He's disappeared, actually. I don't know where he is. But he was a bartender at Touche. I knew him quite well. And I went out there one day. I had a kilt on. And he said, I'm going over to that bar over the road. And I said, what bar? Is there a new gay bar? And he said, no, it's a Latin Kings bar. It's a gang bar. And I said, what the fuck are you going there for? And he said, just come over with me. So I went, and not thinking I'm wearing a fucking skirt, you know? So I go over there, and we walk in, and all these guys, they see me, and they start walking towards me. And the bartender said, no, it's okay, he's with me. And he said, and then the bartender said to me, don't go through that arch. There was an archway into another room. He said, don't go through there. That's where they do their business. And I said, how do you know, how did you get involved in this? And he said, I'm their cocksucker. And I said, well, how does that work? He said, I come in if their girlfriends aren't around. He lived nearby. He said, I take him back and suck their cock. I'm a cocksucker for the. And I thought, what a great job, you know?
And do you think he was serious?
Oh, no, he was serious, all right. I'm standing there in a kilt. He said to them, that's not a skirt. That's a military uniform in Scotland. Of course, they're completely baffled. They don't know what the fuck he's talking about. But I'll tell you, that bar was run by a trans person.
I'm trying to pick. So I don't. And it was up by Touche's, huh?
I think it was. Are you talking about El Gato Negro?
I could take you to it. No.
That was a different place.
God, I went there.
That was also a very dangerous bar, popular with
the
trans sex workers.
Trans sex workers, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it was safer on the inside of that bar than walking past on the sidewalk because the bullet holes in the window were from the inside out. That's a true story.
And I found out about
that bar because a friend of mine went there with his boyfriend, and he was just sitting at the bar, and this chair flew past his ear and into the cabinet with the drinks.
Wow. Behind him.
He said it was like a cowboy movie. He said, you've got to go there. So I used to hang out there.
Yeah, I'd been there a few times, yeah.
Yes, yeah, I love that place. Mm-hmm. I think it was wonderful. But the toilet, I don't know, how do you get shit on the ceiling? How does that happen?
Somebody's mad, and so they take their poop and throw it up.
Just Google tub girl on the internet, and then you'll see how you get
Google
shit on the ceiling.
Don't Google tub girl on the internet.
I don't think I'm going to.
So it must feel very strange now, like sitting in this beautiful, warm swimming pool surrounded by this beautiful desert, a million miles away from Chicago, from the England, from this magical life. And as you enter your golden years.
Yeah, but I mean, Palm Springs is over 50% gay. The entire council are LGBT. Yes, there is a T there. There's a T working there. And Cathedral City is 45% gay and 65% Mexican.
So how much does it cost to live there? And can we move there right
now? It's affordable, right?
People come down. I'll tell you, people come and visit. We've had people visit us, and within a year, they've moved down. Several friends who come and visited us, and within a year, they're here.
When the pandemic ends, you're on my top of my list of people to visit.
And you're like 2 hours from LA, right?
Yeah, 2 hours from LA. People drive to LA to see plays.
Mm. Well, the nice thing about Suki is that Suki is
it's all old Queens.
You're still an old British queen.
If you see anybody under 30 in Palm Springs, they're a prostitute.
I mean, we went there, I think I was probably, you know, around 40 at the time, when I was just like, God, I'm chicken here.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're 60, you're chicken in the desert.
Well, I like that you're British, still runs to the core, and you're always are very hospitable, and you have a wonderful sense of humor. And you're always a delight to hang out with, Suki.
I feel like I'm being rimmed.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, it's not gonna last because we're ending this podcast. Get Saint Suki's fabulous book, A Very British Fairy Tale. It's available through the links on our website at Feast of Fun.
The Memoir of a Groucho Marxist by Saint Suki Delacroix. Miss Suki, if you're nasty.
Yes. If you're friends with me, you can call me Suki.
Otherwise, the formal saint. The saint. When did, saint you get when did you get canonized?
It was in one of my columns years ago in, I don't know, not maybe Nightlines or something. Yeah. I decided that I wrote this article about how the Catholic Church would never canonize me. So I was going to canonize myself and I was going to become the patron saint of cocksuckers. So that's how I became Saint Suki. And then I changed my name legally when I became an American citizen.
So your driver's license says Suki Delacroix or Saint Suki?
Saint Suki Delacroix.
Your driver's license says that.
Yeah, all my documents.
So at the airport, do they just look at you like you're nuts?
No, except my tattooist thought it was the ST was street. Well, how did you become Street Suki? I thought that was...
That's easy street.
And the DMV, when I went down there to get my driver's license, he looked at me and he was very strange, this young man. He was scratching his balls behind the desk in full view of me, and he said, "Are you sure that's a name?"
How rude.
I know. Some people have no manners whatsoever.
Were you like, "Are you sure you're scratching your dick? Or your balls?" He's like,
"What?" He should have, if he pulled his zip down, you know, it would have been fine. That would have been better.
Suki, it's so good talking to you.
No, I'm Saint Suki now.
Saint Suki.
My kids call me Suki as well. And also, of course, I don't know if you know, I've become a great-grandfather twice.
A great-grandfather?
Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
My grandson has just come out of the closet, one of them.
Oh, really? Awesome. How old is he?
He's 22.
Oh. Is he in the Are they in the UK?
Oh, God. Darling, one should never, ever live in the same country as one's children.
Do they miss you?
I don't know.
Do you miss them?
I think about them every day.
Oh.
Well, we think about you and talk about you all the time, of course. And you're always stop bothering me. I got a jacuzzi to sit into and margaritas to drink.
I got a pool to get in.
That pool looks gorgeous, by the way.
Well, you come down. You know, you're very welcome. When the pandemic's over, come down between late May and mid-September, because that's the only time the pool is warm enough to get in.
Really?
Oh.
I don't heat it in the winter, not for $300 a week. No.
You know, they sell solar-powered pool heaters now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
We do have solar panels,
but it doesn't heat the pool.
What people do is they get a black hose and then they put the hose like on the roof, right?
Yeah.
And they run the water through there so it gets like heated up.
You can go on Amazon or Wish.com. Don't ever buy anything on Wish.com, but they'll sell you like a what is it, a mechanical pool, solar power pool heater that will siphon the water out of your pool and heat it up with the power of the sun and throw it back in the pool so it gets at a comfortable body temperature at least.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's but
you're welcome to come and stay. We have obviously have a spare bedroom and bathroom, and you know, it's quite a big house.
Awesome. I'll take you up on that.
You're welcome to come down, because I mean the you know hotel prices here are terrible.
Well, we stayed in especially when the Coachella festival's on.
Our friend recommended it. We went to a nudist bathhouse.
It was a gay nudist bathhouse that had hotel rooms in it. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like outside.
Yeah, no, we were no, that's horrified. The resort. There's supposed to be 20. There's supposed to be 20 of those nude resorts here.
It wasn't. It was very affordable.
Yes, it was very affordable.
Yeah,
and our friend that we went with, they really enjoyed it. But I was just like, this is not what I'm looking. The bed was weird.
It was like, you know, if Santa Claus turns you on and you want to see Santa's package, early.
Christmas comes all year around.
You could definitely, it was a lot of fun. You know, I like strange and unusual things. So, it was definitely a wonderful story. Yeah.
Do you know about Salvation? Do you know about Salvation Mountain?
What's that?
Write it down. I insist you write down Salvation Mountain and then Google it.
Martin or Manton? Like a man?
No, mountain. No. Salvation Mountain. Okay. Like hill, a mountain
in California.
Right near me. Right near here. I'll take you there when you come down because you're going to want to go.
It says, wow, looks Jesus, very, I am a sinner. Please come upon my body and into my heart. It's a giant mountain that is painted with bizarre graffiti as a testament to our Lord and
around
Savior.
Around it is Slab City, which is a community of anarchists, and they have an art exhibition that's just wonderful. And it's out in the desert. It's in the middle of the desert. And when I went into the art exhibition, which is open air because it's in the desert, the guy was sat there and he said, you can photograph anything. He said, you can touch anything. And if you break anything, we just assume it was broken before you came.
I'm dying to see it. I guess it's possible to happen because the whole mountain is made out of rock because it is a desert. So they're able to paint it all these bright colors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just bizarre. It's really quite bizarre. And the people live there, they have rock concerts there. And they have a library, an anarchist library, which I went to. I've been there a few times.
Did you visit Carol Channing's house?
No, but God, and I tell you about that party I went to. I went to the guys opposite, because it's all Hollywood stuff here, you know. The guys who lived opposite to me, they moved now, but they invited me to this old people's home, which was for millionaire old people. It was like a beautiful hotel. He designed a cabaret room for the old people that lived there, and there was a woman doing the life of Patsy Cline. Was I interested? Well, I like Patsy Cline, so off I go. I go along. She doesn't sing like Patsy Cline, but she sings her songs and tells the story of Patsy Cline's life. 2 weeks later, they said, would you like to come and see Carol Channing as a tribute to Carol Channing? And I thought it was a drag queen.
No, it's not.
I thought, you know, I don't want to be rude, you know, I'm not really interested in Carol Channing. But I don't want to be rude to them. They've offered. So I went and I get there and there's only about 70 people there. I only hold 70 people. And in she walks, Carol Channing.
Suki, it's so good to finally meet you.
I did take a picture. I mean, it wasn't a very good one. But so I just phoned everybody I knew who went to Sidetrack and just dropped it in conversation casually, knowing it would drive them crazy. But
yeah, remember when
I have no interest in Carol Channing whatsoever.
Well, yeah, that was like for a time we were getting a lot of Hollywood legends on the podcast. And I think, you know, in terms of Chicago's gay community, they were like, "What? Who the hell are these faggots and why are they talking to my divas?"
You should bring some equipment when you come down and interview Bob. He was a wig maker. He knows Maggie Smith. He's from England. He was an actor in England. He was, as we call it there, on the dilly. He was a prostitute paying to go through theatre school. But he made all these wigs. He knows all these dilly? People. Yeah, we call it on a dilly. Piccadilly Circus is where the boy prostitutes hang out.
Yeah, we have a portable.
Is that Polari?
I developed a portable.
Oh, no. But do you know about Polari?
Yeah, I know about Polari.
That's a different podcast. And we'll have you back on to talk about Polari because that's a whole different show. We developed a portable podcasting studio, so we are able to go on location and tape a full proper show with sound effects and everything. So it is it's a different setup than what we do here, but the sound is comparable. So it's definitely, we tried one this fall and it was a lot of fun. Yeah. Suki, it's so good to reconnect with you. I absolutely adore you. I'm glad that you're in health and in your wits about you. You're putting out books still. The world is still not done with you, and we love reading your books and having you on the show. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Of course, of course. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving and holiday
season. I can't think of anything nice to say about you, but thank you. Thank you for
that's okay. I'm sure your memory's failing as you get older, but you'll remember something. When you do, write it down, and we'll read it on the show.
All right. I'll send you a text if I think of something. Okay.
Bye,
Suki. Bye. Suki Delacroix lives in Palm Springs, California.
Cathedral City. Which is right next door to Palm Springs. It's their stepbrother.
The Memoirs of a Groucho Marxist, a Very British Fairy Tale, is available through our links in the show notes or on our website, feastoffun.com. If you click on the links, a portion of the sales of the book go to Feast of Fun, and it's available on Kindle, so you can start reading it today.
What a treat. It's always so great to catch up with Suki.
You know, if Feast of Fun doesn't do it, who will? Yeah. It's like, the thing about it is, like, Suki is, like, if you talk to anybody who's lived in Chicago for a long time, mm-hmm. they all have a story about Suki.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And they're like, he was drunk and he started fighting with somebody at my party or something. Something ridiculous and outrageous happened.
I'd be like, I asked him about my favorite one. It was like the official cocksucker.
And there's other stories. One time, I'll share this story now.
To embarrass the drug dealer?
The drug dealer. So Suki was like, I can always spot a drug dealer at any bar. I was like, you're full of shit, Suki. So he's like, no, it's true. You always look for the saddest looking person in the room.
Oh.
And the most tortured soul. And I was like, okay. So he says, in fact, I'll get you a bag of cocaine. And so this guy that used to hang out at this bar called Clark's on Clark, mm-hmm. where Mark and I used to hang out with a lot. And in fact, one of our first live podcasts was taped there. Mm-hmm. He goes to this guy. He's on dialysis. He's got like a little bag, you know, to catch whatever is that's coming out of his body.
In a chair, right?
He's in a wheelchair. And, you know, he just sitting there enjoying the time, enjoying the atmosphere. And he goes, do you have any? And the guy's like, yeah. So he takes the wheelchair, goes out on the sidewalk. And like a cat, he starts, spits out a little bag of cocaine that he had sitting in the back of his throat.
Wow, that's amazing.
I saw this with my own eyes.
Because he didn't want to get caught with it.
He didn't want to get caught in it. And I'm just like, what happens if you accidentally swallow it? He's like, it's happened before. No big deal. It just pumps out the other side.
Oh.
So Suki used to come to our parties and with three or four people who everyone assumed were vampires. So, you know, and we were all very wild and appreciative of the eccentricity. What I think bothered people was that Suki never stayed for very long at any party. Mm. And so, you know, when we did the Feast of Fools live shows, it was always a great honor to have Suki performing and hanging around and seeing other people's performances, because he was very much a Quentin Crisp, an eccentric personality that defined the city. Mm. And so, you know, it's great that Suki is still going at it, because a lot of people from that time period are no longer with us or decided to retire and erase any mention that they ever existed. You know, where is Linda Lechina, his gal pal, she compared herself to the female character in A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Aww.
And her apartment was head to toe from floor to ceiling, wall to wall, decorated as a tribute to that film.
Wow.
Black, like, it was crazy. Everything was black and colorful with lots of expensive merchandise from the film and murals and posters. And she very much like felt that film, you know, spoke to her very deeply. And so I think, you know, when Linda probably developed a new relationship with this guy, I could see that she was ready to sort of put aside her stage persona and her public persona and
her vampire look.
Her vampire look, her goth look.
She's probably like a blonde with like big boobs.
Who knows where she is now. But Linda, wherever you are, we love you and we salute you. And to all the wonderful, crazy diamonds, shine on.
Shine on indeed.
Bye, everybody.